That is what our framers intended, and I don't care if it's your team winning today, it won't always be that way. So what in the heck are they doing?
Now, the Maggie Dawn Show continues.
Are you kidding me?
From Congress and courts to burgers and baseball.
I think that speaks to Wisconsinites in a really special way that I've been to 15 baseball stadiums. It ain't the same in other places.
Once again, here's lawyer and economist Maggie Dawn.
Welcome, 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 everyone. Welcome back if you're rejoining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Well, today is our special July 4th early celebration episode here on the show. All show long, we've been talking about our democracy, our history, this political moment, and how we move forward. Because at the end of the day, I don't care, again, which team you're rooting for in this moment, or if you're entirely disengaged, I think universally, we as Wisconsinites and as Americans, it's not a great moment for us. A lot of division, a lot of divisiveness. And so thinking about how do we engage in productive dialogue? How do we understand and consume media and the information that is coming at us every day from every corner, incessantly on our phones, on the television, everywhere we turn? How do we consume that information in a more savvy way? Again, to engage those conversations in a meaningful way, even with those that disagree with us, so that we can move ourselves and our country, our state forward in a much more productive manner. We've got an expert here to help us understand. Of course, we started today by talking with historian David Volker of UWGB about the complexities of our history and some of the mythologies that we tell ourselves about our history and what that means today. We then moved on to talk with political scientist Howard Schwaber of UW-Madison about understanding this political moment and its contours and its complexities as well. I'm now incredibly excited to be joined by the Natalie C. Holton Chair of Letters and Sciences and the Virginia Shapiro Professor of Political Science, also from UW-Madison. Her name is Catherine Kramer, and she's written a book that I think is probably needs to be required reading for every engaged Wisconsinite. The title of this book is The Politics of Resentment, Rural Consciousness in Wisconsin and the Rise of Scott Walker, published in 2016. Many have looked to the book in these moments as a potential blueprint or explainer for Donald Trump's second win. So with all of that as preview and prequel, welcome to the show, Kathy. It's a real privilege to have you.
Thanks, Maggie. That's a heck of an introduction. Thanks a lot.
Well, I very much appreciate you being here. Your book, The Politics of Resentment, highlights really rural consciousness, rural community dialogue, and how folks that live in rural areas of the state talk about, experience politics, talk to one another about politics, and the role in shaping voting behavior and engagement. So I was wondering if you could just kind of, it's a whole book, yeah. So I'm going to ask you to boil the book in a couple of pithy explanations, but tell us about that. What does the book share with us?
Sure. Yeah. So I will not do a 50-minute lecture and have everyone take notes. No, very briefly, I think the place to start is to say I'm a lifelong Wisconsinite, and where this book came from was it was not my intent to figure out, like, why are people voting for the Republican Party, or why are people, quote unquote, voting against their interests? That was not at all my orientation. It was more along the lines of, I love this state, and I had just finally earned tenure, and so I used it as a time when I could drive around the state, invite myself into conversations, and try to understand the way people were understanding politics. And long story short, I happened to notice that when I was in rural communities in the state and smaller communities, what I was hearing was news to me and seemed really politically really important. And it was basically the sentiment of, we're not getting our fair share. Like, we are good, hardworking Americans, and we're not getting our fair share of stuff. Like, we are not getting the taxpayer dollars that we feel like we're paying. We don't know where it's going. We're not getting our fair share of attention, because it seems to us, people are saying to me, All the decisions are made in the cities and communicated out to us. They're not listening. They don't know us, right? They don't understand what life is like in a place like this. And finally, they were saying to me, we don't feel like we're getting our fair share of respect, because whether it's politicians, but whether it's like popular culture or news media or academics, those hoity-toity professors at the...
Those lawyers and economists and political scientists. Yeah.
They look down on us, right? And so, and mind you, like, I'm literally sitting down with people having coffee with them, and they're welcoming me in, they're telling me jokes, they're being very nice to me. And yet they're saying, Kathy, people like you, you don't get it. You don't understand that we are being left behind, as some people have put it, right? Like, we're just not getting what we deserve. And that sets the stage for, I mean, as we'll get into, like,
yes,
all kinds of political arguments tap right in, it's just fertile ground.
Yeah, I think when people feel unheard, disrespected, and unseen, that creates a daily level of frustration and anxiety that, again, in an electionist cycle, if that can be accessed and harnessed, that is powerful, because those are deep emotions. And I found it really interesting when I was reading about your book. I didn't have time to buy it and read it, but I'm going to.
Maggie.
Because it was ordered immediately on Amazon as soon as I started prepping. But it really resonated with me, because after the election this past fall, I sat down for the days afterwards, and I thought, what's motivating people? Because it was clear to me, at least from my vantage point, that it was maybe against a lot of people's interests. And, you know, we're in the midst of this debate over the so-called big bill, right? And I think a lot of people will experience real pain from that. But one of the things that came to top of mind for me was that people were accurately, in my opinion, as an economist, perceiving that they aren't getting their fair share, and that the system wasn't working for them, and that their ability to impact or influence elected officials was low, and that by extension, folks weren't listening to them. And in my view, that is all accurately perceived. These things haven't been working well, but it's not just not working well for rural folk. That's actually the shared phenomena. So I wanted to ask you, how does your research help us understand how those feelings, which I think are universally shared by working people, whether they're in the city or in a rural area, how does that get activated or catalyzed into a particular set of political speech, or frankly, the MAGA movement writ large? How does that get used to motivate people to take certain action or not?
Well, I think one of the things that happens is when people have that feeling of like, what is going on? Like, I'm working my rear off and can't make ends meet, or I can't get ahead, or I can't save, or I feel so like uncertain about the future stability of my job, or how much college, I mean, all these questions of insecurity, right? When people feel like that, they want some answers. Like, they want some explanation for what has happened and who's done it. And so politicians of any stripe have a lot of leeway to sort of create a map for people, right? Draw the picture of, here's what's happened and here's who's to blame, right? And Donald Trump was so clear about, like, you're right to be pissed off, right? And he said it in more colorful language than I will, but you're right. And you are getting the short end of the stick. Again, he would say it in more colorful language. And here's what's happened. It's China. It's immigrants. It's those, like, the liberal elite, what have you, uppity women. I mean, he gave people concrete targets of blame and spoke in a way that people felt, and he spoke to and spoke in a way that people felt heard, right? Seen, as you were saying before.
I think that the challenge becomes, and I've said this on the show before, that it is facially absurd if people can divorce from their emotion and divorce from the way that a Trump or any politician may make them feel in the moment. If you step back from it, the idea that women or Black folks or immigrants or gay folks are the reason that the entire middle class isn't getting its fair share is at base pretty absurd, right? Like, that's not why. It's not the people right. that are in, frankly, yeah. in your same or similar economic class. It's those that hold extraordinary wealth and thereby have extraordinary power that have really, in my language, not yours, Kathy, had their boot on the neck of working people, poor folk, rural working people, as well as urban working people. That's the problem. But that's a much more hard target to both observe yeah. and then, you know, put some guideposts around or to suggest what to do about it, uh-huh. right? And I think the complexity there. So I wanted to.
It's the complexity. Totally. Yes.
Right. And here we struggle. Democrats struggle with the messaging about that complexity. Mm-hmm. When your brain's in a fear state and somebody offers you yeah. an off ramp that's simple.
It's pretty effective.
Yes. Is that part of what was so impactful about the MAGA movement and where we still find ourselves as a country? The simplicity of yeah. the boogeyman, the simplicity of the answer.
Yeah, because what has happened to us, why people are struggling and feeling insecure, there's so many different things that have come together, right? So how do you, in a soundbite, talk about globalization, changes in the manner in which we work, changes in communication, automation, coming AI, right? Like, right. It's tricky. Simplifying it is so effective.
But build the wall, like I can remember that, right? That's a chant. And I think I want to get yeah. into this, folks. If you're just joining us, we're here with Professor Catherine Kramer of the University of Wisconsin Madison. She's a political scientist and a media expert trying to understand the messaging and the consumption of information and the way that our communities understand politics and perhaps how we move forward and build different bridges and different discussions to help, again, each of our communities, our state, and our country move forward to a place of less division and more actual reform and change that will actually help people feel less existentially anxious every minute of their lives. What kind of messages, Kathy, in your research and these many conversations that you've had with lots of folks, what kind of messages and messengers tend to build trust and motivate more positive engagement?
I find that more than the content of a message itself, it's sort of the manner in which it's communicated. Like if people can show up and be with people, come to where they are, that conveys a level of respect that kind of goes beyond any particular set of words.
Respect the people that you're talking with. Let's talk more about that when we get back. I certainly respect her. It's Kathy Kramer, professor of political science at UW-Madison. Today is a special pre-July 4th celebration here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Keep it locked. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Happy early July 4th. We've dedicated our entire show today to what I like to call like the let's think about it together for a while. All the elements of this present moment as we go into a holiday to celebrate our nation's independence and what really freedom means for each and every one of us. We've got a great slate of experts that have been with us all afternoon, and we've got one such expert sticking around right now to talk about how we talk about politics. How do we connect with one another so that we can all move forward together to help get past what I think is a nation divided in many instances. Her name's Catherine Kramer. She's a professor of political science, a media expert at the University of Wisconsin, Madison. We were talking about messages and messengers and what builds trust and what really is perceived as being authentic. And it occurred to me, boy, we just had quite an interesting data point in New York City's mayoral primary for the Democratic ticket. And Zohan Mamdani beat a political dynasty in the state of New York. He beat Andrew Cuomo, who we could have a whole discussion, Kathy, probably about disgraced middle-aged white guy politicians and their attempts at resurrection. But I won't put a pin in that. But he beat Andrew Cuomo. This was kind of a big deal. Yeah. Andrew Cuomo, much more of the party machine, traditional. And Mr. Mamdani is a democratic socialist. What was your thought as you watched that unfurl in light of your research about how we talk about politics and how folks understand it?
Well, it was so interesting to me because I think in his candidacy, we saw two things. One is people do live on their phones in so many ways. And like his social media presence, my understanding was he and his campaign was super good at it. But also, even though we live on our phones, we so appreciate someone showing up in person where we live. There's so much power in that, right? And my understanding is like from that, the last night or whatever, it's 13 mile walk.
Yes, walking the entire Isle of Manhattan. I was like, this guy has a good idea.
So symbolic, yeah. I mean, he was showing up literally in communities that hadn't seen a mayoral candidate in some time, if ever, right? And just stories about people voting for the first time because this, lo and behold, this person actually showed up and showed that he cared about people like me. That's so powerful. Yeah. And so it sounds to me like the wave of the future for campaigning.
And, you know, he really, the main theme of his campaign was affordability. Right. And that's just not a New York City problem, though it's acute in New York. Affordability is a problem everywhere, even in small communities in Wisconsin, whether you're talking about trying to help their kids pay for education or get their family started, buy a house, retire when you want and not be constantly afraid of what happens next. And his accessibility, I think, was a big piece of his success as well. Young guy, we have, and it occurred to me, I listened to a lot of his interviews that he had done just to kind of see how he was talking about things.
Yeah.
And he's what I would call like the New Yorker-ish version of the Russ Feingolds and Tammy Baldwins and Tony Evers of Wisconsin. You know, it conjured up Rusk driving around in his car during his first Senate campaign and people standing on the overheads. It felt very tangible, I think, to folks. And I think Tammy, who's been going all around the state talking about the bill, she's not a slick speaker, but you believe her. She's earnest. Tony Evers, not teaching, you know, like a master class in public speaking, but he's a regular guy that everyone genuinely believes actually cares. There's something in that here in Wisconsin.
Yeah, that's so interesting. And it's a little bit hard to name precisely what that thing is. It's like one of these things where you know it when you see it. And it is something about just like being genuine. And human beings, maybe Wisconsinites in particular, like we just have a great BS meter.
Yes.
Right. And you know when someone is not being real and not being who they are. And you also know when someone is like actually listening to you, right? Or paying attention to you. And I think those politicians have that thing. They're more concerned about actually being there, being present, listening than looking like a politician or behaving like a politician, whatever that is.
Yeah. And be the unpolitician would be my advice. And whether you're a conservative or more liberal, whatever, just don't sound like a politician. People hate that. I hate it. I've interviewed plenty of them and I can tell when they're not, you know,
it's one.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Within 30, 40 seconds, right? You can tell if somebody's like, oh, I have my five talking points and this is what I'm going to do.
Yeah. No.
It's like, oh, well, this interview is going to end fast because there's no there, right? I wanted to ask you about this. Despite, and I think there are some politicians that are very good at showing up in a genuine way, it seems that even genuinely spoke concern is running into a brick wall of resistance from a lot of voters that the MAGA movement has really promoted, which is you say anything about fairness or Black folks or the queer community, and it's met by this sort of anti-woke, I'm done listening to you. And it has been so powerful. And I want to get your thoughts on how do we move past that? Can we talk about fairness and social justice issues and not lose whole reams of folks maybe from rural communities or other communities where that hasn't been part of their lived experience? Our conversation with Professor Kathy Kramer continues on the other side. How do we talk about the stuff, tough stuff, without turning folk off? Next. Welcome back, everybody, and happy 4th of July. Welcome if you're joining us. I'm Maggie Dawn, host of The Maggie Dawn Show, right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is our pre-July 4th celebration all afternoon, and in this hour, we've been joined by Professor Kathy Kramer of the University of Wisconsin-Madison, political scientist and media expert. She's written, I'm going to call it a book we all need to be reading and understanding, The Politics of Resentment, Rural Consciousness in Wisconsin and the Rise of Scott Walker, which came out in 2016. She's got a new book coming out this fall. And right before the break, we started to talk about how to talk about the tough stuff with people who disagree with you, especially trying to talk about the real issues of disparities and unfairness, both for the middle class writ large, but the unfairness and the inequities that we see for Black and brown folks, for the gay and queer community, for women in the workplace, and wage equities and immigrants and all these things. As soon as some people hear anybody talk about those things, brain shuts off, ears shut off, and it's, you know, it just gets lumped into this anti-woke rhetoric. How do we continue to have these difficult conversations about very real systemic challenges without leaving behind and excluding or turning off big chunks of voters and some of our neighbors and friends?
Well, I think one place to start is to realize, like, nobody likes to be told they're the problem, right? And I think sometimes when we have conversations about justice, and it's many different, or injustice, many different forms, there are ways of having that conversation where you're basically, you're preaching to people, you're telling them that they're part of the harm, which may or may not be true, but to recognize that that's not going to get anywhere, and to instead try to, one of two things I think is helpful. One is to try to not persuade or preach, but instead say, I want to understand more about where you're coming from. Just tell me what you're thinking. Tell me how this makes you feel. Tell me where you heard that. Just genuinely try to understand, and maybe not even in the same conversation do anything else, you know, but a little bit down the line, then you can start after someone has like understood that you actually care about what they think and you want to understand what they're thinking, then say something like, that's so interesting. You know, here's how I've been thinking about it. Tell me what you think of this, and then lay out how you think. So that's one strategy. Another is to think like, what are the different ways of talking about political issues other than there's an us and there's a them, and there's the people who've been wronged and there's the people who've done the harm. But instead, like, what do we want our state to look like? What do we want our kids, like, what kind of state do we want them to inherit? What kind of country, like, what kind of world do we want to live in? And just have that conversation. Like, we can all imagine a life where we have time for leisure. We have time for our family and friends. We're not busting our rears trying to make ends meet so that we maybe can take a vacation once in a while, right? And just get people talking about what the good life seems like to them. And then you can come around to talking about like, and wouldn't it be great if people weren't so mean to each other on the road anymore? And like, talk about what it would mean, what it would look like for us to treat each other well. And that's, I think most humans can buy into that. I hope.
Yeah, I will very humbly admit that I have really good days about doing what you're suggesting, and I have really bad days where if someone, and I have heard probably more overtly sexist and racist things in the last couple of years than I had in my prior 45 plus years on the planet. And there are some days when I just don't have the capacity for that, because I feel like, why am I always the one that's having to come to, right? To open up. And I don't know that there's any solution for that, except I try to find enough energy and safety and then renewal around my community and folks that I know that I'm safe with, and to express those frustrations so that when I'm in the moment with someone who's saying something that is really disturbing, I can find that reserve. And I'll be real blunt about it. This is me saying this, folks, not Kathy. But in these moments, I think it is incredibly important for people that have some of these privileges, be it white folks, men, cisgendered people, citizens, to stand up and say something when we hear things or when we see systems or actions or things taking place, because the people that are often feeling the most acute pain are exhausted because it is, I think to myself, try to think to myself humbly, if I'm tired, I can't imagine how others must be feeling and how exhausted they must be. But try to understand more, ask questions about what someone is saying, and try to return us to those values and what I think are the shared what's. Like, what do we want to see? We basically agree on that, right? What do we want our lives to be like? There's agreement there. And then we can have a policy discussion about the how that's rooted in this more shared vision, this more shared set of what's, if you will. Yeah, it's hard. Easy to say, damnedly hard to do. Yeah. Again, folks, if you're just joining us, we're with Professor Catherine Kramer of the University of Wisconsin-Madison, political scientist and media expert. Here's the other problem that I run into, Catherine. Kathy, help me do better with this. I'm having the difficult conversation. People are trying to explain why they think this or where did you get that? And out comes torrents of misinformation and gobbledygook. How do we deal with the fact that everywhere all day long there are distortions, lies, and frankly intended propaganda to give people inaccurate information? What do we do about that?
Well, okay. Listeners, Maggie did not pay me to say this, but I think having media that is focused on the state or local level is super important, because I think part of what is broken in our democracy is this evaporation of media or news, even more specifically, that speaks to people's everyday, like, tangible, visible concerns. So national news, super important, but we have an overabundance of it. And nowadays, when people hear about public policy, it's like in this very removed way that's not at all translated for what it means for Wisconsin, what it means for my community. And that makes so much room for people to believe all kinds of stuff that might not be factual. But instead, if people are here, are getting information, they can say, well, actually, that I was at that protest, or I've seen that development prop, like that part of town or part of my county that's being redeveloped. And I don't know, I actually think it's pretty good, or they weren't listening to us, or, you know, people can balance it against their own experience. So that's one thing, but it's a huge problem. I mean, and social media, the way it teaches us to think about other people and interact with one another, I think is hugely problematic. It's not at all the kind of reflective, patient communication I was just sort of advocating for, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't want to answer by saying I don't know, but it's a massive problem.
Well, I think part of what you just said is, if you're talking to people about things that they can see, feel, and touch, just like the successful politician is someone that people see in person, can touch and feel, that is authentic. If you're talking about issues where people effectively can be like, well, that checks with my experience, or I can verify it because it's about my community and I can see what is being talked about.
Yeah.
I think that has power, right?
Yeah.
And how to do that. It's you're right on when we talk about, okay, well, what are the state and local news sources and are they reliable? I think one of the great challenges, especially for mediums like talk radio, is what is going to keep and hold attention. And yes, of course, we want to talk about the local and the state. And then there's this national news. And how do we, I think one of the things that has been missing for so long is that folks that are talking about the national news don't relate it to what's happening in our own communities. Like, why does that matter? And trying to build those bridges so that people can see the connections between what's happening in their life with some of these broader discussions, but in a way that's accessible. Such a challenge. Before we run out of time, Professor, I wanted to ask you about what is called the Cortico platform, which I am so fascinated by, because you're trying to think and work differently about some of these problems. Tell people what this is.
Well, in short, it's like the happy circumstance of me just by chance meeting this fabulous computer scientist at MIT by the name of Deb Roy and the team of people working with him. And it's basically a platform, software, and technology an approach that brings small groups of people together to talk about their hopes, their concerns, their dreams, their wishes about what people in charge would hear. And it records the conversations and makes them visible and searchable and shareable so that people can have the conversation, be heard, and listen to other people. And it's been a wild experience for me. And it goes back to many of the things we've been talking about, Maggie, and that how important it is for people to have the opportunity to share their thoughts, hear other people, and feel heard. Mm.
Can regular folks access the platform or search some of this data? How does it work?
Well, they can go to cortico.ai and learn more about the platform. And currently, our approach is to work with community partners, which might be local governments, a nonprofit, sometimes an institution of higher ed. And so you'd have to convince your organization to work with Cortico, but people can definitely check it out more online at cortico.ai.
That's a powerful tool. I've been in facilitated listening sessions and feedback sessions, and boy, we all show up with what we want to hear, which we are sometimes very attuned to pick out and not hear the other things. So a platform that can help us actually know what was said in a more objective way is powerful.
Thanks. We hope so. We think so. Yeah. Thanks.
Yes. I'll be checking it out for sure. Kathy, happy 4th of July. Thank you happy for all that you July. Do. She's got a new book coming out this fall. Check it out. That's Professor Kathy Kramer of the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Again, thank you so very much. I'm Maggie Dawn. I'll come back with my final thoughts on the other side in this special July 4th preview episode of The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Stay with us. Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Wow. We have had three incredible conversations this afternoon with three very knowledgeable experts. Big, big thanks to historian David Volker of the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay. Big thanks to Howard Schwaber, Professor Emeritus of Political Science at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And a heartfelt thanks to our most recent guest, Professor Kathy Kramer, also a political scientist with Madison, as well as a media expert, who's written extensively about how we understand politics, especially here in the state of Wisconsin, which brings me to this point. As we were talking about with Kathy, and on my better days, I try to always remind myself of this and talk with folks about this, and that is, what do we all want for ourselves and our families? And I think what we all want for ourselves and our families is pretty basic. We want reliable and affordable healthcare, accessible and quality early childhood education and education for our kids. We want to go to work and be paid a fair wage in a workplace that is not dangerous, where we aren't being tormented, that isn't toxic. We want to be able to take a vacation every once in a while. We want to make sure that we're safe in our homes, that we've got a home that's affordable. And of course, we want to be in our best ambitions, able to retire at a reasonable age. And if we're lucky enough, enjoy our grandkids and spend time with our family and friends. We want to worship and pray in whatever house of worship we wish, to whatever God we wish, without interference of the government. And we want to be able to decide who we are as individuals at a really basic level without interference from the government. These are the things that we want, that everybody wants. And that includes clean air and clean water and a road system that works and sewage systems that works and parks for people. Because unless you've got, you know, 50 mil in the bank, you can't buy your own park. You can't clean your own water, or you can't make the air clean around you. You can't create your own street system. So we need government to deliver some of these basic things that help us reach our shared goals in our lives. These things don't differ depending on whether or not you live in Ashland or Rhinelander or Racine or Appleton. These are shared desires. We all want these basic things. And these shared desires don't change depending on if you're black or white or gay or straight or a man or a woman. And politicians that suggest that those categories of being or identity mean that we want different things are lying to you. And what I gleaned from this afternoon is I think we all also agree about some of the highest ideals that we understand, our best ideals that we understand our country was founded upon, that we fought wars to protect, that our friends and family members have died in service of. True freedom means choice. True freedom means that you have the ability to control your own destiny, that you have options, meaningful options, where to move, what to eat, how to dress, how to be, whether to get married or not. And true choice requires a modicum, perhaps even a goodly amount, of fairness and equity, that systems don't privilege certain people over others. And certainly, freedom and true choice requires our governments at every level, local, state, and federal, to be concerned about those choices and to ensure that we have wellness, that the vast majority of us have true, meaningful choice in our lives, and that we are well enough to exercise those freedoms and those choices. So as we go into the July 4th weekend and we celebrate with friends and families and barbecues and baseball and kids and all these fun things and fireworks, we, you and I, have a responsibility to ensure that each and every one of us continues to have and enjoy true choice, true freedom. And to do that, we're going to have to make our voices heard. And the way that you do that is twofold. You do that by speaking up and speaking out, even when it is uncomfortable for you. You may hear some things over this July 4th weekend. If you are in disagreement with them, no matter what side of the political spectrum you may come from, if you are in fact safe and speaking up isn't going to put you in any dangerous spot, please speak up. Tell folks what you believe in. Remind people that we actually do all basically want the same things. So speak up this weekend. Make your voice heard. And remember, it always comes down to voting. And we are not that far out from the midterm elections of 2026. That's going to do it for me in this special July 4th preview episode of the Maggie Dawn Show. Remember always, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it is always better when we stand together as truly free Americans. Happy 4th of July.